Welcome back to the GEI podcast. Undoubtedly, you noticed that this is a dry opening, which gives me also the opportunity to introduce some of the upcoming changes to you. To begin with, and most importantly, we are going to rename the podcast from GEI podcast to Here and There. This is a play on words, and we will elaborate on that in future episodes. Also, alongside the changes, we will update the cover art as to what the GEI podcast actually looks like in your podcast player. So stay tuned for that. We'll explain how it came all about and what the idea behind this is. Secondarily, today is a special episode and I get to welcome two guests to the GEI studio. Sandra Tietke, she is the director of the Goethe pop-up In the Skyways in Minneapolis, where she commonly invites German artists to display their works of art. And one of those artists actually is with her in the studio. It is Albrecht Pischl. Albrecht is a sculpturist, modern art, collaborative art, eclectic art, and Albrecht actually collaborates with several local artists in this case, with Andy Delaney, with Caitlin Farstad, David Flotter, Chris Larson, and Setare Shabazi, who is actually Berlin and Tehran based. So quite the mix of artists who came together to work on Commission Roundabout. In this special episode, we dive right into it and talk about roundabouts themselves, but also what they mean in a social context. So this conversation, which starts about art, gets to be quite philosophical as we go along. Also, in full disclosure, we had a little bit of audio issues in the beginning, so it seems a little disjointed once we enter the conversation. The only thing that you've been missing essentially is my quick introduction that I had live on the air, so to speak, and we dive right into the conversation when I ask Sandra what the pop-up is actually all about. And from there, we then just go all the way through, and I invite you to come along. This is a phenomenal conversation. Welcome to the GEI podcast. What is the idea behind the pop-up, actually?
So it's basically only to promote culture, German culture, in whatever form whoever runs it wants to do it. Because the actually in Minneapolis, St. Paul, the situation is that the Germanic American Institute is already giving these classes, German classes. So I don't have to do any of that. It's really just purely a cultural programming. Because we're small and it's kind of like a one-man show with a few people who help. So it's not a full institute in that sense.
Makes sense. Is there any particular kind of art that you're looking for to represent, or is it basically across the board? Is it painting? Is it music? What kind of art?
Contemporary art.
Contemporary?
No,
I mean,
no. It kind of, it takes all kinds of different formats. No, it's not painting at all. Actually, it's more formats that are also that are non-object based. So it's a lot of concerts and performances and film screenings.
Okay.
So things that are ephemeral and also that are not not visual arts in the kind of traditional sense.
And how do you go about finding artists? I mean, there are a lot of artists. How do you identify the ones who truly are a representation of Germany and our culture?
I don't think that I think about it like that, that they're a true representation of German culture. I think it's more kind of bringing in people. Most of them live in Berlin, because I live in Berlin also, so kind of that's where the network is. And the artists that are invited are artists that I appreciate, or whose work I appreciate. And it's not so much, or the work is not necessarily about representing Germany. It's more that because the artists are German or live in Germany, that's who is coming and who is showing in the space.
So Albrecht, this sort of explains how you entered the scene. You had prior exposure, you kind of knew each other previously, or
very
how
much
did
so exactly. So Sandra knows my work from Berlin, where I live and work. Mm-hmm. So she saw shows of mine and performances, concerts I also do. So she invited me to come, and then I asked her what would be good months to come, and said, oh, actually winter is fun here, it's particular.
That it is. We have the snowiest February in history. So
I was, yeah. I was going for it and didn't regret it yet.
Yet. I like the temporal classification there. Yet. what kind of art, if we were to summarize your art, since obviously podcast, it's really difficult to display something or to showcase something in particular, what kind of art are you?
Right. I mean, in a broader sense, it's conceptual art in various mediums, mostly installation and film and a little bit photography. And I work with ready-mades a lot and sometimes incorporate work of other artists. So for this occasion, like in the process of discussing what I'm going to do here, I propose to do to continue like an kind of an edition format I was doing for the last years, where it's called Commission Roundabout, and I'm inviting other artists, in this case mostly local artists from Minneapolis, to conceive a sculpture for an imaginary roundabout, traffic roundabout. Mm-hmm. And the model of the sculpture, like the models, I mean, I invited five artists. They are presented on record players in the center spinning.
Interesting.
So it's between, it's something between a roundabout sculpture and a record player sculpture. And they both kind of, there's this idea of spinning and the notion of, you know, a particular display and a particular situation for the artwork to be situated. And so yeah, so it's a kind of a collaborative exhibition, in a sense, where I define the frame for the artwork, but other artists actually produce the work, and I transformed the Goethe pop-up, I transformed it into sort of an agency. It's called Commission Roundabout Agency for Public Art and Circular Thinking. So it's a bit like a fictional, like halfway fictional agency, which in the setting of the skyways was nice because it looks, we wanted to give it a very corporate look.
Mm-hmm.
And also the space looks very corporate already. And we have like a lot of other companies in the neighborhood. So that was really fun to set it up like that. And I produced also like, I kind of produced like a broader corporate design, I would say, for the space.
So essentially you started with a vision, the roundabout kind of vision, the circular thinking kind of vision, and then you invite other artists, local artists, to collaborate with you. Is it challenging to work with artists who usually follow their own passion, their own vision, to incorporate them in your vision? Are there any edges, any things that are not exactly smooth in that process? How does that go?
Not exactly, because the I invite artists from very different backgrounds and kind of fields and practices. Like, they don't necessarily have to be like sculptors in this sense. So they all bring in a very different approach, but the more different, the more interesting, in a sense. And then I define the frame, but the artist is also open to kind of go beyond the frame, in a sense, or like to go beyond the frame, or kind of deal with these limitations I kind of give. So, you know, like the limitation is it should fit on a record player or on a record somehow. But also artists deal with this also with the size and all kind of things quite individually. But I think in this case it's great that you have a very big variety and of different artworks that come together. Some are more conceptual or political or or ironic, or I mean, there's many different ways into the.
Has it actually ever happened that you had to change a submitted sculpture, or that you didn't like something
well
about it, or that you kind of
the most extreme, I think, was one that the artist, he handed in a whole car tire that was cut through the center. So it was kind of a bit like a donut ring, like a half, like a dissected donut. And that could actually not be, and there was a hole in it, a tiny hole where the pin of the record player goes through, but actually it could never stand. Or, I mean, I could place it with a little support just to represent the idea, but it couldn't be actually spinned and played because it's just super heavy and big. I mean, it's like, yeah, it's almost impossible to make it. So it's a little bit like, but for me, it's also fine because I'm like in the moment I define the frame quite, it's in a sense a little limiting, maybe for some artists. That's also what I found interesting. And then of course the artist is also free to transcend the limitation. I mean, yeah, I'm not gonna interfere.
But generally, all the sculptures have the ability to move, to actually be in
exactly.
motion.
Yeah, yeah. So it's a bit like a kinetic sculpture, and everything that moves looks just a little better than when it's static.
It certainly gives it an entirely different spin, pun somewhat intended here.
And then also maybe what I have to add is that every sculpture comes with a record of the artist's choice. So it's a set of the LP and of the sculpture. So they come together.
Music
exactly.
Essentially underlines the visual, so there's harmony in between, or how is that
depends.
Choice coming?
It depends. I mean, this mostly it's, again, there are very different ways artists are approaching this. For some, they just take kind of a ready-made something from their collection that they like. Some artists take a record that they maybe have even produced. Because artists sometimes also, you know, the conceptual artists or that work with sound, they, you know, they have like they release records too, or I mean, there could be very precise conceptual reason or like a reference they want to open up for the record. So that's also very it's very various. It's a very various field.
To go back to the significance of the Goethe Institute, the pop-up, the to some degree still cultural connection to Germany. I would say that to some degree you are here also representing Germany in a variety of ways as an artist, as somebody who, well, lives in Berlin. So you are truly a German, a Berliner. How does this fall in place for you to actually represent Germany on a cultural perspective?
I mean, I think that maybe to turn it around a little bit, the nice thing about it was that I actually really collaborate with the local artists here, and there's a very basic and kind of beautiful exchange, like getting to know the artists, their kind of network, their studios, they get to know my work, maybe it's more like in this sense of you coming here as kind of a cultural kind of artist ambassador or something. Maybe like for me, it's more about the notion of exchange than to really truly represent something that I bring here. Or maybe the notion of exchange is collaboration. That is what I bring in a sense. Or what's
and I think that's also in general the approach that the Goethe pop-up has with the artists that come in, that there's always this level of collaboration with Minneapolis-based artists or musicians. Or we produced a reality TV show where we worked with three different Minnesotan families and spent a lot of time with them, and then they came to the screening of the first episode with their families and friends. So this idea of collaboration and exchange, as I was saying, is always quite important.
And I assume this coexists with the idea of Wunderbar Together, the German-American initiative of friendship. So therein, obviously, the collaboration makes more sense than the true representation of a singular entity.
Yeah, I would say so, yeah.
What's the next step? How do we go?
Oh, next step where do we go from here? Corner. Next Thursday, I'm giving a concert/performance at Palmer's, the old classic dive bar in Minneapolis. That's a long history, right?
It's on Cedar Avenue by the towers.
A performance. What kind of performance? What are we expecting here?
It is music, but I'm not playing like classic instruments. Even though they look a little bit like instruments, they're actually guitar-shaped CD racks, CD shelves out of metal. Like, they have very awkward-looking, kind of postmodern designs of CD racks that actually mimic guitars. And I'm actually using them as instruments. Like, I have like pickup microphones, and then I amplify the sound that comes from them, and I get a huge variety of sounds out of them that I kind of layer up through like a looper, and it goes through tape delay. So I'm kind of building up a complex kind of soundscape through it, and kind of take the notion of them being an instrument kind of literal, and but also represent, also playing with the format of the maybe the folk musician or the, you know, like the guy on the stage with the guitar. You know, it's kind of also a bit like a cliche of rock music and of folk music, and I found it like maybe in the context of the bar, it's kind of an interesting take on this tradition.
So no distinct genre, as in only pop or rock or classics or jazz, but sort of a mixed variety.
Well, it's gonna be pretty, it's gonna sound maybe a little bit more like Fluxus, or like, you know, playing with a heater, making music with a heater or with a pot, you know, with a kitchen pot. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's like, it's a pretty kind of metally sound. I mean, I get a big variety out of it of sound, but it's still, I cannot play melodies in a sense. So it's more like a percussion.
Okay.
A strange percussion sound, and some of them have sort of strings, and but yeah, I cannot label it in a sort of original musical sense.
Okay.
So yeah, it's kind of experimental in this way.
One more time, when does it take place and where?
So yeah, on the 7th of March at Palmer's, from around 7:30.
5 days from the time of this recording, probably 4 or 3 days at the time that you are listening. And if you miss it, then, well, can we catch it on YouTube or somewhere?
Possibly.
Maybe also maybe on the website. Probably. There's going to be maybe a little snippet or something.
Yeah, possibly, yeah.
On the Goethe Pop-Up website.
Yeah.
Goethe Pop-Up website is...
So I called my program Goethe in the Skyways, and Albrecht already mentioned the location of the pop-up. Mm-hmm. It's in the Skyways, and I'm not sure that everyone is familiar with the Skyways. Probably they are, but it's this long, 11 miles long pedestrian network in downtown Minneapolis where the pop-up is located. So the website is goetheintheskyways.org. And there's all the information on it, also the concert.
Goetheintheskyways.org. Let's sidestep for just a brief second. You've just come over here about 2 weeks ago, and you have another 10 days to go. So your impressions, your exchange, and what you've received emotionally and so forth after having come here is pretty fresh in your mind in terms of comparison to back home. Is there anything that stands out to you for those who don't know what the differences are?
I mean, I have a very particular living situation because the apartment where I live is connected to the Skyways, and it's going, I mean, I can actually walk to the Goethe pop-up without my jacket, basically, through the Skyways. So that kind of frames the experience in a sense, to be exposed to that kind of urban infrastructure, which is quite particular, obviously, here, and which is also a theme of the a particular intended setting for the pop-up, to be in this this sort of particular urban infrastructure, and then as Sandra has a background here, I got a good introduction.
What is your background here, since you've already been introduced now to that degree? So what is your background related to that?
I've lived here. I've lived here for 2.5 years, a few years back. So I have, I know the cities quite well, and I also have a network of friends that, you know, we've seen, that we've spent time with. And we've been to, you know, First Avenue, and we're going to go to a basketball game. Yeah. And kind of just taking Albrecht along to everything that's
yeah,
happening.
Yeah, that's what I also wanted to add. Maybe, like, I think I'm going to more concerts here than I go to in Berlin in a year.
What was the reception of your art so far with the people who actually have stopped at the pop-up shop? What was the feedback so far? What are the thoughts?
No, I think what's great about the installation, and it's also very intended so, is that the, you know, the vitrines, the windows are used to display two of the pieces, or two of the spinning sculptures, and so that really attracts the passersby of the space. So we've had actually a variety of people come in because of I think they felt attracted to what they saw in the vitrines. So there's it's really a broad mix there. Yesterday we had people from LA, from Russia. A class from MCAT came by. Usually it's quite difficult to catch the kind of the normal office worker, because they're on such a mission to go from A to B to C, and you can always tell that they recognize what's going on, but not so many people actually stop in. So it's more kind of the people that are more wandering around that look into the
and
that come into the space.
But it was also the idea for the show that you can actually see the show from the outside in a sense. So you see two of the three record players are in the window, and there's a projection also of a sculpture that is kind of blown up to the wall and kind of a big size. And this you can also see very well from the outside, because it's very it's a huge window plane. So it was kind of the idea that you can also, like, in this shop window fashion, actually also can see the show on the outside. I mean, you can always decide to come in, or doors usually open, and you can learn more and see a little more, but you also have an appreciation from the outside. So.
Is your art a moving exhibition, or is it going to stay here and then disappear? Is this the one shot where actually people can see it, and it's now or never, or?
Well, as I mentioned, it's an ongoing format, and I did it for the third time over the course of the last 3 years. And I'm always inviting different artists every time I do it, but they all end up in kind of an archive. And I also, this time, I brought a few sculptures along with me that are portable and not so big. And it's kind of, it's almost like, I almost feel like a DJ playing record, not playing records of playing sculptures.
Playing sculpture.
So yeah. Whatever fits in the suitcase, I can also take somewhere else and perform it there. So that's a little bit like the playful approach to it, or the kind of reference to DJ culture too, that you don't play records, you play sculptures. And also the act of actually placing them on the sculpture, on the record player, starting them to play, change them once in a while, that was kind of sort of part of it. So it's kind of a growing family of sculptures, and yeah, because of the size, they have a certain mobility, or they're also easy to show somewhere else, I suppose.
What's the reaction you're trying to get?
I mean, in a sense, I try to create this very serious looking kind of agency office, but then you have this weird record player sculptures, and I'm interested in how this expectations work, especially in this context of the Skyway, that you know, you see something, it looks very company-like, it has a little bit a weird name, but anyway, it seems to be serious, and then you see the record player, and then, yeah, I mean, it's just like, I think even for a passerby, or who just takes a glimpse, it's kind of a little bit of an awkward thing to see, and it's somehow rewarding to see, even though maybe it's a very short encounter sometimes of people that just like walk by, guided this way.
What I got stuck with, and it's still sitting in my head, if you will, was the terminology you used earlier, circular thinking.
Uh-huh.
Which, from a cultural representation, at least from my perspective, has a ton of significance. And since the Minneapolis-St. Paul area is slowly but surely plagued with a million incoming roundabouts. I'm making the connection between the circular thinking,
absolutely,
between your installation and then, of course, the actual physical application with,
absolutely,
our traffic patterns changing.
Absolutely. So in a way, when you mentioned earlier, like, you know, my kind of, what I would bring here that kind of represents Germany in a kind of basic sense, then my idea was somehow to, I mean, when I did this project before in Germany, it had a very, it was happening in a setting where there exists a lot of roundabouts, and it's a very kind of common thing to see. I mean, even more so in France and England, but also Germany has quite a lot by now, and that it's a bit of a standardized, kind of banal place that is kind of calling for something to be placed on. That was always my, because you have this empty kind of plate or pedestal or like a plinth almost, like that's display situation that you create through the roundabout. And when we came, when I was thinking about doing it here, also in the dialogue with Sandra and some research I did, I kind of realized that actually in the US at large, like, there's very little roundabouts, and it's like people are kind of opposed to it.
Mm-hmm.
And I found this super fascinating, especially in a kind of like in a car-based country like America, that this kind of modern, kind of efficient traffic infrastructure doesn't seem to exist so much. At the same time, Minnesota seems to be a state in the US that has quite a, I mean, has an increasing popularity of roundabouts. I think there's only, what was it? New York or one more state?
New York and Washington State.
Washington, they have more, I think. Mm-hmm. But, I mean, Minnesota is pretty much kind of there. So I was kind of interested what makes the, that there's something in the cultural constitution that maybe favors a certain traffic type over another, or a certain way of moving through traffic, or to encounter other cars, or to interact with other cars. There's a cultural disposition that favors, you know, the crossing over the circle. I mean, I had this kind of, I always wanted to invoke this very basic visual or symbolic.
There are a million metaphors in this.
Opposition
the
for
office.
the cross versus the circle, sort of. I always had this kind of keywords in my mind as a very basic aesthetic opposition. And obviously there's a lot of things attached to it, or like it could, yeah, be like a metaphor for a lot of different things. So that's why this kind of the term of circular thinking also came into being, sort of to kind of broaden the notion of the roundabout, the actual physical traffic roundabout, to something broader, or that's making it into a metaphor for something else. And actually we're also going to have a talk on the 11th. Mm-hmm.
Also, this idea of creating imaginary sculptures, we also kind of wanted to include this real level of the traffic roundabout. So we have this panel on Monday the 11th with Ken Johnson, who is an engineer at the Minnesota Department of Transportation, who is actually the promoter of traffic roundabouts in Minnesota. So he will have a little presentation at the space, and then we pair him with a designer, curator, theoretician from the School of the Art Institute in Chicago, a visiting professor there. She's Polish-German, but she lives in Chicago currently. So we're going to have a conversation, we're going to host a conversation between the two of them to touch upon these two points, to show the real level impact of this roundabout in Minnesota, and then to also have someone who can maybe talk about it on a different level.
Well, it's interesting functional perspectives.
You said that Minnesota, Minneapolis, St. Paul are plagued with roundabouts. So you are also a not a proponent exactly, or what's your stance on that?
My stance on roundabouts is the practicality, I think, is unquestioned. It makes perfect sense from a flow pattern. but it inevitably asks for considerate collaboration. Meaning there are certain rules, even though they are on the books, there are also rules that are essentially not on the books that ask you to just be courteous to the person that is coming in or being in the roundabout. Whereas in a linear intersection, we are confined and constricted by the signal lights, by the traffic lights. So we essentially follow a pattern that is pre-established for us. And in a roundabout, we perhaps need to pay more attention to whoever else is collaborative within the structure. So without going too deep into the metaphorical here, I think it's a cultural representation as to what we're willing to do and how we're willing to actually work with one another, as opposed to, I'm on my way, it's my green light, I will go, you will stop because it's red for you. And if you dare to violate the rules, there will be consequences. As opposed to looking at the roundabout as a methodology of collaboration, of circular thinking, which doesn't necessarily have to be negative. But my concern with this is the, to some degree, social rejection, and whether we are actually ready to engage in that type of living together. Whether we are actually at that point.
In the United States or in general?
In the US, particularly, since our system here just runs differently than in Europe. Again, without going too deep into the weeds. But I can see why there is some rejection. Personally, as a European, it's like, yeah, sure, bring it on. I'm perfectly fine with letting you come in unless I'm in a hurry. And then you're probably going to notice that I'm in a hurry and we collaborate the other way around. Connect, talk, and it can be nonverbal, right? So make eye contact. Yeah, absolutely.
Like, that's what I found fascinating about the roundabout, or maybe general thinking about traffic, that of course everybody is in his own car, and it's kind of the metaphor for social isolation and actually a non-social space. I mean, this is what is always irritating for European coming here, that there's sort of a lack of public space and everything is very insular and everybody pops with this car from, you know, from one place to another, but they're only connected to the car somehow. So it's exactly what you mentioned, or you went into detail a little bit, that the idea of the car or traffic also being a kind of proto-social space where there is actually some interaction and you interact the way you, you know, like you behave with other cars and how you negotiate the space, like the traffic space, which in a roundabout, you know, it is a more of a space of negotiation than on a junction.
And I think there's also something about being obvious and being subtle, you know, which I think is also a cultural difference in my view, that the roundabout, it is kind of, it's a subtle statement because it actually functions better, but it may not appear as such from the first impression. So you kind of have to engage with it to understand it. Whereas the intersection is just very clear. It looks that it's more functional. It seems very obvious, but it's actually not better. A better way of kind of dealing with.
So the intersection itself would be very binary, right? Yes,
yeah,
or no,
yeah, yeah.
Black,
mm-hmm,
or
exactly,
white, zero,
exactly,
one.
Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah. Not so much in a roundabout.
Exactly.
Even though, yes, again, there are rules on the book that make it technically binary. I think the social understanding of a roundabout, and since we're already down that path now, we might as well keep on going. The social understanding in a roundabout, I think, is a little bit different. And also when I apply the lens and the view of, let's say, the unspoken social contract that we very explicitly experience and live within in Germany and Austria, Switzerland, and so forth. Also, of course, the Scandinavian countries, which are always the poster children for the social contract. I don't think we necessarily experience it in the same way here. And if we were to, then we have plenty of objections to what this particular type of social contract shall actually be and how it's constituted. The roundabout, in a very subtle way, would almost be a violation of this particular type of interchange. I killed the conversation. But I mean, am I off base here, or is this?
That's absolutely. I mean, this is this is absolutely all the things that interested me here, and that's the whole project is in is a is informed by. I mean, this is really a big part of it. Yeah, I mean, this is all super interesting.
Is this the type of conversation that when actually somebody has time to swing in and then really stop and take it all in and get the impression of all the individual pieces, is this a conversation that ever ensued, or is this something that nobody actually even catches?
I mean, it, you know, same as with our conversation, it kind of developed, though. It depends on how much, you know, people are willing to go into it. But then, you know, you come to this, you come to similar points, you know, you talk about roundabouts, then, you know, maybe you also, there's a realization that there's not so much in the US, but there's more here. And then, you know, I mean, a conversation could build up similarly. And we may also a little bit push it this way if we want to. But
I think that's also, that's what I appreciate about Minneapolis, St. Paul, as opposed to larger metropolis, that people do take time to look and try to understand and, you know, try to engage with whatever they see, and particularly in this space where we are in the Skyways, as I said before, it's mostly tourists or visitors that kind of fall into the space, and they have more time that the normal kind of office worker. So they do try to engage and they stay for quite a while, and you start a conversation, and then you may get to these points.
The evolution of your art. How did you arrive at this particular type of thought process, which led you to the circular thinking, to the roundabouts, to the motion within the sculpture? This did not just come overnight, right? Either, right?
Okay, maybe there's two ways in originally. One was always like my investigation in the relationship between like vision and sound, sort of, or objects. Sort of objects or visual things and relationship to sound could have, or kind of breaking up this binary sense. So I think that's why I was attracted to the record player sculptures, in a sense, which relate to the roundabout sculptures. And the other way in was it's maybe a sort of, in a broad sense, an institutional critique, like within art making, that I mean, kind of questioning the formats kind of art appears in, whereas the notion of the roundabout, which is kind of a public, it's kind of a very cliched public kind of a commission to do art, and it's almost like I mean, there doesn't seem to be any motivation on behalf of the artist or of an institution to be, I mean, there's a very basic sense of like something has to go there because it's empty. And I was always kind of interested in this kind of, in the basicness of the setup, of doing something, like, in a very basic thing, doing something, like in a very limited frame. And then from there, I mean, and the kind of the broader context with the, you know, circular thinking, and like to really think about the roundabout as a cultural and behavioral kind of space, this really only started here. I mean, when I came to the US. Before that, it was I think I didn't think so much about the roundabout itself as a format, even though maybe this kind of the notion of the loop I was also attracted to before already, like this, even though the roundabout is not necessarily a loop because you enter it and you leave it quite fast, or you make a U-turn and you make a whole turn, or you really like the sculpture in the middle and you take a few extra rounds. But but still, I kind of was interested in also the concept of the loop, or maybe like a contemporary society being kind of trapped in sort of a loop, or also developments in music, like let's say like techno music or something like that. That's also very loop-like. and you think the notion of the loop was interesting for you.
There are so many pieces that fall together into one particular item that is then being presented in the whole of the exhibition, that no matter who's stopping by, they should be finding something that speaks to them and something they can take away from it. And I think that's really the key ingredient here. Mm-hmm. Can they actually take the sculpture away with them too? Is there a price tag to them? Can they buy them, or are they off limits?
They're sort of off limits. Yeah.
But they come in an addition,
yeah.
And theoretically they could, yeah, be sold. It's just that not right here, or the Goethe pop-up is not the right space to...
It's not a shop. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. You know, but theoretically, because they all have an addition of 5, whereas 3 are for sale, essentially, no?
Yeah. So it's a bit like... Also, the idea behind this to also lend a little bit of seriousness to the playfulness, maybe. I mean, it was kind of important for me to always have it as kind of a format that's... I mean, if it's in real... an edition, and it comes in edition of 5, and so, yeah, it kind of makes the thing a little more solid rather than having just like a sketch and then that's it.
But there's also an interesting objection to what would be the next cultural norm, which is the one of instant gratification, to not being able to stop by and say, I want this, I'll buy it on the spot, and then disappear with the piece in question, but to actually having to take your thoughts with you. And
we do have a saleable item, which is the roundabout donut, because we're collaborating with Cardigan Donuts, which is the donut shop next door.
Wait a minute, you can't just withhold important information like that. There is a donut for sale.
We made a roundabout donut in addition of for the show. It's a collaboration with the donut shop, mm-hmm, next door, Cardigan Donuts, who we've kind of worked with in the past. We always have donuts for openings, but we've never actually designed a donut. So in this case, Albrecht designed a roundabout donut, and it will be on display at Cardigan Donuts starting on Tuesday next week.
Yeah, not just on display, also
for sale. Yeah,
for
like for sale.
Consumption.
I just wanted to ask that, which is almost a ridiculous question.
Yeah,
yeah. But can it? Is it?
Oh,
edible?
Yeah,
is
yeah,
it
yeah,
edible?
Yeah, yeah,
absolutely.
Yeah, yeah,
I mean,
yeah,
there's
yeah.
a blue sanding sugar on it, but it's kind of, you know, it just tastes a little bit
yeah,
like
yeah.
sugar.
Because they experiment a lot with different tastes and flavors and colors and decor, so they were very open to the idea of working with us, and they will. Yeah, as I said, starting on Tuesday, there will be a section with the roundabout donut. That
I mean, especially if you make a donut, which is the
round thing.
Yeah, yeah. It makes perfect sense.
Yeah, it was really a fun thing to do.
Yes.
And then it's a win-win situation, because we will send people over to buy a roundabout donut, and Cardigan Donuts will send over customers to see the show, and
yeah.
It's all cool.
And that's also what I love about the Skyways, that they're these very different... shops and situations next to each other, and that you kind of encounter people and end up working with a donut shop, for example, which otherwise probably wouldn't happen.
Oh, it's brilliant. It's just a great combination collaboration that visually makes all the sense in the world, and then from a consumption perspective, even better. An artist never sleeps. An artist always develops. You do sleep, so you're one of the few. But I think there are a lot of stereotypes that come with artists, from some being considered eclectic, some being considered always in flux, trying different things, and just going beyond what we would call conformity and boxes. What's next for you?
I'm probably still someone who's pretty much in flux and who travels a lot, and you know, is doing residencies. Like, next thing I'm going to be in June and July in Tokyo for a residency, for example.
Oh, wow.
And then my girlfriend lives in Bangkok, so I'm going there often, also work there, have shows there, worked with the Goethe Institute there before. I mean, it kind of implies quite a bit of traveling and experience in different cultural contexts, and migrating between different cultural contexts, and I mean, obviously always... seeing different things, also art, of course.
Mm-hmm. How long is the pop-up shop still available in the Skyway?
We're open through September, probably through mid-October 2019 of this year. So every month there's a different program, a different artist with a different...
So sure. Your installation here ends before too long, actually.
22nd of March.
Okay. Yeah. And then there will be a new artist who will do something else.
Can you reveal who that's going to be?
Sure. It's Hanne Lippert. She's also Berlin-based. And she's not German, though. She's Norwegian-British. But that's also, I think, that's also the idea of, or at least that was also my idea, this that Berlin is not, or what's Germany nowadays, you know, and what's German? And where we live in Berlin, and in Berlin it's so mixed, and there's so many different people from all over the world. So if that's reflected in the pop-up, for example, that's, in my view, much more of an image of the contemporary Germany than having only Germans, you know, for sure. Example. So she's she lives in Berlin, and she's coming, and she works with language, and we will collaborate, but with Minneapolis-based poets, and there will be readings in the Skyways by Hannah's poems, and also of the Minneapolis-based people.
Well, I think the podcast publicly extends an invitation.
Yes.
That has to happen. I mean, audio obviously lends itself. The representation of art lends itself. I think this is a great collaboration for us as well.
Perfect.
All right. Well, Albrecht, thank you so much for joining us. Appreciate it.
Thank you, Günther. It was fun.
Sandra, thank you so much.
Thank you.
We'll shall return here within our special episodes and our regular episodes here about to come. As always, if you have any questions, please fire them our way at language@gai-mn.org. Again, this language@gai-mn.org. And that's it. That's a wrap. Michael signing off. Until next time.